A city is stronger together. So let's hear from the business and community leaders that keep Milwaukee on the upswing. Presented by Horicon Bank, the natural choice for all your banking needs. Now here's the host that's always on the upswing, WTMJ's Jeff Sherman.
Now, to business, gentlemen.
Welcome to the upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. A big thank you, as always, to the good people, the good community-minded people at Horicon Bank for their support. You're listening to this, it's probably a little frigid where you are. So I'm going to start right at the beginning with an upswing coffee index.
Is that coffee?
Time for a quick look at your coffee and how much it costs. It's the Upswing's Coffee Index.
It's cold outside. Prices are staying true, though. Even as we hit this, like, multi-decade nominal high in coffee prices, we hit that last year. But if you look at coffee crops right now, they're expected to stay historically elevated in terms of price, but a lot of experts are seeing maybe a little easing in pricing as we get through 2026 because there's more supply. The crop's going to recover a little bit, and not as many climate events, specifically in Brazil, where a lot of our world's coffee is grown. But no matter what, you have global and you have local impacts with everything. So when you look at your price of coffee, it's probably dictated by local economies, right? And even competition right down the street. This morning, I stopped, and it's odd. I usually don't stop at my local Starbucks. It's about 7 blocks from my house. The Starbucks in the Village of Shorewood, right there in Oakland Avenue, $2.65 for that 12-ounce coffee. It was filled to the brim a little bit too much and spilled in my car, but I got past that. You add the 17-cent tax, which is 6.4%. But I marry that, you know, just down the street if I were to kept driving. If I bought that same cup of coffee in the city, the tax is 8.4%, so I add 22 cents instead of 17 cents. But still, $2.65 for a 12-ounce coffee. So it's good to see the prices staying true. But it's interesting. Somebody asked me the other day, you know, why do you do these coffee indexes? What's the point of them? My point is, A, I'm fascinated by pricing and why one place can charge one price and why another place can charge another price. There's an economic story here, right? Pricing and margins and market psychology and all the stuff that tells you a whole lot about people and places. So beyond the dollars, what I'm drawn to with coffee, and that's what the upswing's all about. It's about community. So if it's a cafe or maybe it's the gas station, maybe you're getting your coffee at Quick Trip today, or retail stores or whatever, you're going to stay there a little longer. So there's more revenue opportunities. That's a revenue driver for sure. But it's about culture and belonging. But then you think, all right, economy. Buying a home, buying a car feels like way out of touch for people. But micro spending, and that's what we're looking at with coffee prices. That's why we do the coffee index. The micro spending for a $6 or $8 coffee doesn't seem expensive because everyone's talking affordability. Everyone's talking economics now. And while I'm not spending $7 or $8 to buy a cup of coffee, a lot of people are. And it really speaks to the financial behavior as our identity. It's happening on a local and global level. And these little transactions are adding up because they have emotional value and appeal for all of us. But they also maybe, in some way, shape, or form, are kind of hampering the economy. So it's interesting to keep your eye on this. And we're going to do our best here on the show to do so. But we're getting to the point maybe, I don't know. Maybe too many people feel like they can't achieve homeownership, but they easily can achieve a $7 or $8 coffee. That's interesting. It's also a little bit scary, but it's fascinating. So that's why the coffee index, it's never just about the cost or the caffeine, maybe a little bit. So maybe, just maybe the coffee index and how much you're paying for your morning coffee. It's not just about the caffeine or the cost. It's about something a whole lot more. It's a snapshot of how we're living right now. Those micro buys, those little bit of joy, it all really matters. So buy the coffee always buy the coffee. Track your expenses. You know, track your steps, too. That's good for you. If I see you in line, I'm going to buy you a cup of coffee, guaranteed. Let's go after our coffee to up.
Now it's time for the
two, count 'em, two.
Two up on the upswing.
Two up, two things in the business world that I'm seeing that you need to know about right now. First up, happy 100 to Sendix. Sendix Food Market, longtime community fixture. Really a beloved brand in the greater Milwaukee area. Celebrating 100 years in business this year. The business began in 1926 as a produce market located in Shorewood and owned by the Balestrieri family. Began by selling family fruits and vegetables. Again, 1926. Now it's become this go-to destination, still filled with generational pride, family legacy, a passion for quality food, and appreciating the customers. All the same principles apply today as they did in 1926, which is a wonderful thing for us to take a ton of pride in. Over the decades and generations, Sendix has grown its footprint on its guiding principles. And you look at now, Sendix has 18 stores employing over 2,000 people. A lot of impact, too. The great thing with Sendix and other local brands that sometimes we take for granted is that they support so many nonprofits. They support Stars and Stripes Honor Flight, Feeding America, Eastern Wisconsin, Mac Fund, all these charitable partners at Sendix. They've been there for years, and the company believes in supporting local and growing local. Happy 100 to Sendix. I've reached out to Ted Balestrieri. He's going to be on in the coming weeks. We haven't figured out an exact date, but watch for that. Second up, Threads versus X. Now, if you're using social media to monitor your news or to get the impactful analysis of what you're interested in, I always think maybe first mover advantage doesn't mean a whole lot if you stop innovating. And maybe, just maybe, Elon Musk is sensing a little bit of that too. I saw this week that Meta's Threads app is now attracting more daily users on mobile than Elon Musk's X. Now, what does that mean? Well, I don't know. When you're talking, what, 141 million daily users on Threads, 125 million daily users on the X app, it's a lot of people. Threads may be getting a little bit of a boost because it's really dove into creators and a slew of new features. Cross-promotion across Instagram and Facebook is driving a bunch of the traffic too. But X still dominates the web like 17 times more than Threads. But Threads is really coming on. And as a reader and user of social media, I really suggest that we all continue to fine-tune our use and really hone in on the accounts that matter and the topics that provide value in our lives. And I think Threads is doing this without a lot of the politics and just the controversy that is happening on the X platform. Changes in social media usually aren't driven by features and sizzle. They happen when people feel it's easier to show up and learn and be themselves there without any friction. That's what Threads is doing. So it will be interesting to see how Threads continues to grow and evolve. But I say, if you're not on Threads and you're not using it as a news-generating platform or a news-you-can-use platform on a local and global level, check it out. Speaking of local level, the East Side has always been one of Milwaukee's great storytelling neighborhoods. You got late nights at Von Trier. Lines outside of Beans and Barley, especially now because it's closing next weekend. But you got premieres at the film festival at the Oriental. But right now, that story is in a bit of a transition moment. Beloved institutions have closed their doors. New restaurants are quietly signing leases, but they kind of have this ghost of, what is the East Side? What is it going to become? There's been so much construction. I'm not sure what the neighborhood's all about. Well, I'm here to tell you, we have just the person who's going to tell us exactly what's happening on the East Side of Milwaukee. Coming up next is Ryan Lasing. Ryan is the executive director of the Eastside Business Improvement District. He's on the front lines with the small businesses, the property owners, and the neighbors, trying to write the next chapter for Milwaukee's Eastside. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, joined in studio by Ryan Lasing, the executive director of the Eastside Business Improvement District. Ryan, I appreciate you taking time out of your day to spend a little bit of it with us.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
So for fans and listeners who might not kind of know all the inside baseball of business improvement districts, what's the Eastside bid, and kind of describe your role on North Avenue in the beautiful Eastside neighborhood?
Yeah, definitely. Fantastic question. So for our bid, having a business improvement district, that means basically a lot of the businesses on the North Avenue corridor, as well as branching off into Farwell, Prospect, some of those businesses. We then help facilitate to make the Eastside a better, brighter place for all these businesses, so people want to come out. So what we do in the bid is we, of course, take care of beautification when it comes to, you know, the beautiful flowers you see on the light poles to the planters, incorporating new mural artwork into the neighborhood. You might have seen coming across North Avenue Bridge, we have a nice kind of welcome to the Eastside mural now, as well as taking care of Black Cat Alley, which is the number one public mural gallery here in Milwaukee. And so the bid definitely has its hands in so many things, from beautification, sanitation, as well as marketing these businesses. You know, we do what we can to get these businesses showcased on social media, in the newspaper, things like that. And so we definitely try to cover our base when it comes to, safety, security, sanitation, beautification, and everything in between for these businesses.
Yeah, really all hands on deck to provide the resources that are needed for any size business to kind of continue to amplify the density and the development opportunities in the area.
Exactly.
All right. So you're relatively new in the executive director role. When did you start again?
Remind me. Yeah, I started in October of 2024.
Okay.
It's been a great first year of just learning all the ups and downs and all arounds, getting in contact with our city officials, seeing what we can do to push the Eastside, but also getting to meet a lot of these businesses, whether they're, you know, large businesses like Educators Credit Union and the hospital, to these smaller businesses like, you know, Von Trier with owner John Dye, and Poppy Bakery with Amy Gorski. You know, so many great just locally owned businesses as well.
So what drew you to the neighborhood and the job in particular? I know your background, big involved in makerspace and makers markets in the area. You're an artist. Just kind of talk about your career path a little bit and kind of what drew you to the role.
Yeah, so I've worked with different bids around the city in the past, whether it comes to putting on street festivals such as Summer Solstice or Brady Street Fest, and working with bids in that capacity. And so seeing this opportunity with the Eastside, I definitely jumped on it. I have, of course, many fond memories of the Eastside, like so many Milwaukeeans do.
Did you grow up in Milwaukee?
I grew up in Milwaukee.
Where'd you go to high school?
I went to high school at St. Thomas More High School down in Bayview.
Right.
But, you know, definitely went to, had my college years on the Eastside, a lot of my friends, and just, you know, enjoying what, you know, I've been around for a while, so the Globe East and, of course, Landmark's been around, and the Oriental Theater, and just, you know, late nights at Ma Fisher's and things like that. So I have so many memories with the Eastside, and also with this artistic background, seeing that Black Cat Alley is a part of the Eastside bid gravitated me towards it. And so, yeah, I have this passion for not only the arts and the local arts scene, but then, yeah, supporting these small businesses. And the Eastside, of course, has legacy businesses such as Beans and Barley and Von Trier and Hooligans, and, you know, so many places that have even evolved over the years. You know, Vitucci's is now Veer North. So having this opportunity, I definitely took the opportunity to jump on it.
We're talking with Ryan Lasing, who is the executive director of the Eastside Business Improvement District. What I love about the Eastside, Ryan, is kind of you have this energy and intersection of, you know, mainly because where it sits, right? You're near the lake. You're near a major university. You mentioned UWM. You're near big homes. You're near small homes. You're near apartments. So there's just this wonderful density that creates all these unique opportunities for interactions. Have you sensed that in your first year?
Yeah, it's been great to see this almost maturing of the East Side, whether it's to the new homeowners in the neighborhood, to the new freshmen coming in for UWM. You know, we have such a diverse neighborhood and community on the East Side, and such a large demographic that it's great when I see, you know, Landmark Lanes, you know, jumping off with whether it's the college kids or the neighborhood folks or people coming in and visiting that want to really see what the East Side in Milwaukee has to offer. So, yeah, I mean, definitely the East Side is, in my opinion, a beacon for what Milwaukee stands for when it comes to the diversity, the age range of everybody that's visiting these local shops. And, you know, every day I walk through Black Cat Alley just to you know, see how it looks. And, yeah, you know, every time I'm walking through there, there's visitors, whether they've lived in Milwaukee their whole life and they just finally discovered Black Cat Alley, or somebody that's gone there plenty of times is like, oh, my family's in town, my friends are in town, I'm going to take them through there. And so it's always nice to then stop and chat with these people and get to know them. Hey, do you live in the area? Do you work in the area? And just, you know, seeing it grow in that aspect has been phenomenal.
What do you think is the most misunderstood thing about the current state of North Avenue? And we can kind of go into some of the recent closings, and I want to get your impressions of, you know, recent JS Online story that, you know, kind of had the headline of, is North Avenue dead? Yes, there's some shock and awe in headlines like that. I get it. Rachel Bernard wrote the story. Rachel's, you know, dining critic at the Journal Sentinel. Amazing reporter. But the reality is that there's been a lot of business closings as of late. How does that perception then mirror the reality that you're seeing on the street?
Yeah, you know, I was glad to have people reach out and to get the BID's perspective on these things. And again, all of these neighborhoods in Milwaukee are evolving, and you know, the North Avenue corridor and the East Side is no stranger to that when it comes to the ebb and flow of businesses coming in and possibly, you know, leaving. Obviously, Crossroads Collective was there, but now as Crossroads left, we have Naughty's Plates moving in.
Yeah.
Sip and Purr was there. They left. Now we have Poppy's Bakery moved in. Izzy Hops moved out. We got Smoke and Jack's Barbecue moving in. So that's the thing. There is this evolution of the neighborhood, and you know,
and that's natural in a lot of neighborhoods in a lot of cities. It's so often, I think, easy to focus on, oh my gosh, my favorite spot closed. And there's history and respect there for sure. But the natural kind of ebb and flow of businesses, it's okay.
Yeah.
It's actually showcasing growth.
Exactly. And you know, seeing where the East Side was when I was, you know, a college kid hanging out down there, and just, you know, obviously a lineup of bars and restaurants, and seeing how that's, you know, matured and evolved over the years. But the big steps that have been taken, I feel like, have been game changers for the East Side when it comes to the North Avenue construction project. We now have safer bike lanes. It's safer for pedestrians. You know, we had studies that a lot of people were like, I don't feel safe walking my dog on North Avenue. I don't feel safe with a stroller. And now that narrative has changed where bicyclists feel safe. Cars have slowed down. We were in the top five dangerous intersections of Wisconsin when it comes to North and Farwell. And now that has changed. You know, we've seen data where reckless driving has gone down almost to zero because you can't. We have permanent bike lanes. We have bump outs for bus stops to help people, whether they're, you know, elderly or ADA, make it more accessible now to get on the bus. And just when I love it when people come to me and go, Ryan, traffic is so slow on North Avenue. I go, good. That was the point of all of this, to slow people down.
Exactly. Slow down as you're driving. You get to see everything that's around you, right? When we come back, Ryan, I want to get your take on Beans and Barley, one of those places that we all as Greater Milwaukeeans feel in our bones. I want to get your reaction when you heard of their closing. This is The Upswing. You're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. We're joined in studio on this beautiful day by Ryan Lasing. Ryan is the executive director of the East Side Business Improvement District, the beautiful East Side. So, Ryan, when you first heard the news that iconic Beans and Barley, after 52 years, was closing, what were your impressions? I'm sure you know the owners, you know the past, you know the history there. Kind of, how do you process the legacy of such an institution?
Yeah, I mean, you definitely hit the nail on the head that it's a legacy. You know, everybody's got memories with Beans and Barley. And when I heard the news, it was definitely heartbreaking. And so many things go through my mind. You know, is it just the way the economy is when it comes to running a restaurant? Is it, hey, 50 years is a long time. Maybe it's time to, you know, take a rest and have some time for family and things like that. And then hearing the change of obviously building ownership and things like that. So many things go around. And of course, so many stories come out. But once Polly and James made their announcement through social media and through the news outlets, you know, it was good to hear that they are kind of okay in the sense that it's been over 50 years. Yeah. We're going to leave a lasting impression. We have this legacy. And hopefully somebody can almost take the torch now and continue that, you know, eating healthy, having a great spot to create memories on the East Side. So it was definitely heartbreaking to see a place like Beans and Barley with the legacy they have moving out. But of course, we obviously wish them amazing luck on their next path. And we're very optimistic that somebody is going to come into that space and again push the East Side forward with, you know, a locally owned business. And, you know, sadly, we've definitely been hit with closures when it comes to Beans and Barley, Pomona Cider Company, the Triple Tap Hacienda, you know, Izzy Hops and El Encontro. It is a large list. But again, we're optimistic that businesses are looking at the East Side to move in, to prosper. And, you know, again, there is a sad reality that if we want these local businesses to stay, we got to support them. We got to come out the way Strangetown kind of sent an SOS saying we need help right now. And people came out that there was lines down the block. Now that Beans and Barley announced closing, they got lines out the door. So we need to keep those lines all year long to keep these locally owned businesses thriving and surviving.
Yeah, I always say everyone should make a local restaurant list because, you know, we're all. You know, we have these places that we love. We go to those places. But you got a list of places you haven't been to. Turn to that list every now and then. You're like, all right, I've never been here. I've never been there. And make a point to support local as much as you can.
Yes, 100%.
So when a building like the Beans and Barley building goes on the market, how involved is the organization in terms of what could happen there next? Do you act as a consultant there? Are people running ideas past you? Like, how involved is the organization?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely try to be that area of resource and support. You know, do we want, you know, no offense to a drive-through bank, but do we want that moving into Beans and Barley? Not necessarily.
Right. You want to be an advocate for what you think is best for the neighborhood.
Exactly. And so speaking with the city, speaking with the aldermen, you know, we have voiced what the bid wants in that building or even in the neighborhood when it comes to, yes, a locally owned, you know, bar, restaurant, retail shop, whatever it may be. And of course, we love supporting the larger companies we have in the neighborhood, you know, such as, you know, we have a Panera Bread, we have Urban Outfitters, things like that. But yeah, to continue that legacy of locally owned businesses on the East Side is what the bid is really pushing for. And it's nice to know that the city has heard us, the alderman has heard us, and hopefully that's the direction it's going to go into.
Do you get a sense of like that right balance between local and national brands on a street? Is that a gut? Is that a foot traffic? Like, how do you get that sense of what's best in terms of a strategic plan moving forward?
I think it's just a good balance of, you know, knowing what people want. If they want something, you know, quick food to pick up and go, or if they want just accessibility when it comes to their banking institution or to get to the hospital or being a part of the UWM campus, you know, it's great to have those. But what we hear from people visiting, what we hear from people living in the neighborhood is, of course, they want to continue these small businesses and see them thriving. So, you know, we've had Studio B & Co. just move into the neighborhood. They're a great family-friendly arts organization. We have T-Bay Arts Center, which just got a grant from Joy Engine to, you know, stay in the neighborhood and to have these different activations. So, you know, we definitely have what it takes on the East Side to move forward, to showcase all the talents, whether it's in the arts scene, the culinary scene, and even the theater scene. Obviously, having MKE Film in the Oriental Theater has been phenomenal for us. So that's what the people want, and that's what we're going to keep pushing for.
Very good. Let's talk a bit about the former BBC Triple Tap Room, Hacienda Corner, right there on, that would be Farwell and North.
Yeah, you got it right on the Five Points intersection there. So, of course, it's such a hot spot where you have Von Trier, you have where Crossroads was, where Naughty's Plates is moving in. You have the new Ivanhoe Plaza, which has been a great addition to the neighborhood. You got Hooligan's Bar, and then, yes, the BBC, yeah. such a great building. And so we've heard some talks, nothing official on paper, but, you know, Jalisco's Cantina has put in up a sticker and contact us on the mailbox.
I was on my East Side neighborhood walk the other day, and I saw a Jalisco sticker. I'm like, all right, I haven't seen this reported anywhere. So, you know, New Mexican place could be a New Mexican place with anchors in tradition in the area could be great. For
exactly. And so, you know, I've reached out and I'm hoping to hear back from them to again, be that resource. You know, what forms do you need? How can we set up a meeting to talk with, you know, the alderman or something like that? So, again, that's where I'm here as that resource to help bring people together, bring them to the neighborhood. I haven't gotten any official applications or anything like that yet. No architectural review applications, anything like that. And so that's the thing, being in this position is, you know, we definitely want to have our hands in as much as possible to make the neighborhood grow and succeed. But yeah, usually I'm kind of the last one down the line. Once the application goes in, the city gets it, the alderman gets it, and then their office usually lets our office know.
We're talking with Ryan Lessing from the East Side Business Improvement District. Ryan, when we come back, you mentioned the Oriental Theater a bit, but I wanted to touch on that. Really a neighborhood North Star. Talk about how you work with the theater. And then get into some of the events and kind of the street life of the neighborhood feel. Events are so important for neighborhoods. I know you've done a ton of them, but I want to see what's new for this upcoming spring and summer. This is The Upswing. You're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, Community and Connections from an East Side lens, the beautiful East Side of greater downtown Milwaukee. I can say that, right? It's greater downtown Milwaukee. We're all one big neighborhood. So, Ryan, as you look at kind of the North Star and the pillars of your district, the Oriental Theater has always been one of those for sure. How important right now is leveraging that theater as a foot traffic driver for the entire neighborhood? Because the storytelling aspects from a theater are really important, but that business is changing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, having Milwaukee Film come in and you know, really lead the Oriental Theater has, in my opinion, been a game changer. You know, having Milwaukee Film Festival focus on Oriental Theater and Downer Theater was phenomenal. Seeing the traffic come out for that and seeing, you know, things of collaborating with the neighborhood, collaborating with the local businesses, having, you know, big stars come out such as Hugh Jackman. You know, Oriental Theater, in my opinion, is my favorite theater. It's where I want to go on the East Side in the city of Milwaukee. And I love catching a film there or going to something cool like Rocky Horror Picture Show or Friday Night Freak Show, things like that. So, you know, like you said, they're that North Star. They're a beacon of the neighborhood. And, yeah, we definitely want them to stay and continue pushing them as much as possible. And they're continuing to grow in aspects of hosting international films and having meet and greets and talks like that. So if you haven't been to the Oriental Theater, you definitely got to come out and experience it. And that's the great thing is the East Side isn't a place where you just jump in and jump out because, you know, you had a round of bowling at Landmark or you saw a film. You can park your car and have a whole day on there. Go through Black Hat Alley, enjoy a bite to eat in Ivanhoe Plaza, and then, yeah, catch a film, catch a round of bowling, go to Ma Fisher's for something, have a beer at Von Trier. You know, it is that neighborhood where you can literally spend a whole day there and experience what I believe is some of the strongest parts of Milwaukee.
Yeah. How do you work with Milwaukee Film and the Oriental team in terms of better connecting them to nearby businesses, not only for the film festival, but for other marquee showings, like right now, Song Sung Blue, still getting a good box office draw and probably drawing people who otherwise may not come to the theater because of the local connections. How do you work with Milwaukee Film just to further leverage that impact?
Yeah, you know, we have meetings with them. One of Milwaukee Film's you know, top leaders is one of the board members of the BID. And so having that connection to go, hey, how can we help? Whether it's just through some email blasts, through social media, collaborating on posts like that, or finding them different venues in the neighborhood to host an after party, to host some of these events. And so that's where, yeah, we can come into play where, hey, you're looking for this, you know, type of food to host. We're there for you and connecting the dots. Whether you're looking for an outdoor event and you want to host something in Ivanhoe Plaza, great. What do you need from us? How can we connect you to the more businesses? And so that's where, yeah, we definitely just try to be a resource for Milwaukee Film as much as possible to amplify, hey, they have some amazing films, amazing events. Come on through. And hopefully you saw it through social media or you heard it right from my mouth because I stopped you in Black Hat Alley to go, what brings you to the neighborhood? Well, let me tell you what's coming up.
That's your job, to amplify the good. Could you talk to the Ma Fisher's owners for me and see if we could extend the hours just a little bit, maybe to like 10 p.m. or maybe one night a week till midnight? Like, I miss that late night dining experience, and we don't have enough of that in Milwaukee. So put that on your list, please, too.
Yeah, definitely. I've definitely caught myself going, oh, it's 9:30, 10. I'll go to Ma Fisher's and go, that's right, they changed their hours. So I have plenty of memories myself.
All right. So let's talk summer solstice, Black Cat Alley, gallery nights. Events have always been a big part of any neighborhood. How are you thinking about events now, and what's that portfolio look like for the rest of the year?
Yeah, so now that I have, you know, my feet wet with a year under my belt, running a successful Summer Solstice Music Fest, we're thinking big for 2026, you know, and that's in all aspects. When it comes to Summer Solstice, we're, of course, trying to make the footprint as big as possible, the biggest bands you can think of, local acts, national acts, Ivanhoe Plaza, of course, we just did a huge ground mural, and we're going to be using the plaza for more makers markets, vintage markets, music series events. It was great to team up with the Argo over this past summer to have concerts in Ivanhoe Plaza. Black Cat Alley, we installed 7 new murals this past year because of an anonymous donor gave us money strictly for Black Cat Alley. And then, you know, we're starting to expand Black Cat Alley. We want to get more murals out on North Avenue, get more murals down on the UWM side of things, and then really host these larger gallery nights and showcase not only the murals that we have in the neighborhood, but some of these local restaurants that want to support local artists and showcase them on their walls or live painting. So we definitely will be announcing a whole lineup of 2026 events coming up soon. Even we're going to have a blood drive in February for Valentine's Day with Vintage Bar. So definitely stay tuned, whether it's on social media or just on our website, the eastside.org, because we're going to be bringing it strong in 2026.
Ryan Lessing is the executive director of the Eastside Business Improvement District. Ryan, can we do a couple lightning round closing questions here for
you? Let's do it.
All right. Everyone wants to know the hidden gems or the underrated small businesses, maybe the ones that, you know, don't get as much attention. What's one of those on the east side that you can tell us about?
I think there's a great stretch of businesses just south of North and Farwell. You have Alley Boys Bagel, Wayfinder, you got the Wine Bar, you have the K-Pot, like Korean barbecue, you have the Judy's Cantina as well. And that's all in one strip of a building that you literally can experience so many different cultures, so many different, you know, food experiences. That's, I think, a place where people tend to just drive by instead of going, oh, wow, there's this much I can find right here in this strip of stores. So, again, if you're looking for baked goods, we got Poppy's Bakery. We got Blooming Lotus. If you're looking for barbecue, check out Smoking Jack's that just opened. Nice. So we have something for everyone. Just, you know, keep your eyes open. See what's out there. Take a walk around the block.
So what's a concept that you love to recruit to North Avenue that if we could just, you know, snap your fingers tomorrow, it would happen? What is that?
You know, again, really pushing these local businesses and the arts. I'm such a huge arts guy that when I see some of these large murals down in the Third Ward and downtown, like Giannis and stuff like that, I want something big on the east side. I really want people to go, oh, yeah, I know where I'm at when I'm driving through the east side because I see this huge mural.
Lots of sides of buildings. There's a lot of opportunity around the area to accomplish that. All right, finally, and this is the question I'm asking everyone on the upswing in this new year. But we have a gubernatorial race, a lot of candidates. if you could provide one concrete pillar or platform for a candidate for governor, what would that be and why?
Just making sure that you're supporting everything local, whether it's local owned businesses, local restaurants, the local art scene, making just traffic better when it comes to getting through the city, making it safer. And it's great to see that some of those things are being pushed at the local level. But let's keep people safe. Let's keep supporting these small businesses. And you're going to see that Milwaukee can flourish when you put that energy and that money into your local economy and into the arts and maker scene as well.
Very good. Ryan, I appreciate your time. And I really appreciate the collaborative nature of the discussion as well. I mean, you had mentioned at one point we were talking that you're working with the Argo in Whitefish Bay. And I think perception-wise, sometimes that's not the reality in people's minds. Like, oh, Milwaukee doesn't work with the suburbs or this or that. But the reality is there is a lot of collaboration in the development and entertainment space. So kudos to you and your team for all that you do and keep it rolling.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And you're exactly right, is we're all here to work together and push each other forward.
Very good. Finally, the Milwaukee Rep is out with its new season. Bunch of new commissions for next year. The Milwaukee Repertory Theater has announced a new slate of new commissions, including some world and American premieres, an expanded development opportunity through the Jack D. Lewis New Play Development Program. We are really blessed in this market to have transformative gifts always, especially those that impact the arts. David Hero and Jay Frankie, $1 million for the new slate and new commissions in the Rep next year. I'm looking through the list here, really interested in the world premiere called MKE MVP by Matt Zimbowski. Matt did the sold-out hit recently called Dad Season Tickets. Now he's doing one on the Bucks and the MVP championship season through his lens as a fan. It's going to be amazing. The Rep always does amazing work. Matt is a Dominican high school graduate, later went to UWM. Keep your eye on what's coming up at the Rep. Next week on The Upswing, Dr. Kimo Ayoun from Marquette University.